Fasten your championship belts, because this podcast is unprofessional. Welcome to your weekly home for wrestling reviews, discussion, predictions, and more. This is Unprofessional Wrestling. Here are your hosts, Schwartz, George, and Travis.
Hey, everybody. How are you doing? Hey, yo, hey, yo. Thanks for checking out Unprofessional Wrestling. We're back for the second week in a row. Hell of a streak. Hell of a streak, boys. I am Travis, of course. Along with me, we got George. George, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am fantastic. And then live via satellite, pal, is Schwartz. Schwartz, how the hell are you?
It's a warm day over Minnesota and can't complain. Love it.
Over there in Tiffany Stratton's hometown, our beloved women's world champion currently. Yeah, boys, we're very excited to be here. Today's a big day for us. We are doing our first interview. And speaking of that, why don't we bring our guest in right now? Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to the human monster truck, Perry Von Vicious. Hello, Perry. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
We're very excited to have you. Like I mentioned before, this is our first interview that we've ever done. I'm especially excited, of course, because you know I work in the monster truck world. So I guess I can start by saying I first discovered you probably two-ish years ago, maybe. You popped up on Instagram somehow, no idea. You know, I've been kind of seeing what you've been doing ever since, and I've seen you know, a lot of your promos you've done in front of the green screen, you know, with the old school monster truck clips playing ahead of time. And I've seen pictures of like, you know, your Gravedigger inspired gear and things like that. So as a monster truck nerd, especially, this is very exciting for me. But we've never talked to a wrestler, any of us. So very cool stuff.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
So I guess, first things first, got some information from your cage match profile and everything like that. So I guess, yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't really know where to start. So I guess I should start by asking, where did your early interest in wrestling come from? And what kind of attached you to that? Was it certain characters, certain storylines, or certain moments you remember? What are your early memories of wrestling?
Really the thing that like bought me in, like I had seen little bits of it here and there. Like I didn't grow up in a wrestling family at all. When I was in elementary school, I would have been, I think, first or second grade. My brother would have been a kindergartner. We got a Sega Genesis and had no games for it. We had one game. My dad had managed to pick up Donald Duck's Quack Shot, which was awesome. I played it on stream recently, and it 100% holds up. My cousin Zach had a Sega, and you know, had played through a lot of his games already. So he kind of, you know, secondhand, we got donated a small box of his used games, and one of them was WWF Monday Night Raw. And that was like the first time that I really, I think, understood what wrestling was, even seeing like Doink the Clown and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Yokozuna and Undertaker all in that game. Like, I started to understand like, oh, I see. So like what I've known about wrestling over just a ring with what I'd ostensibly been told as a little kid, or just fake fights or whatever, however it was described when I'm a little kid. I started to understand that there were like these big characters, and they were like, some of them were scary, some of them were weird, you know, and that was really intriguing to me. And my brother and I really enjoyed playing the game. And that kind of stuck with me through elementary school, kind of just a little grain in the back of the head. And then when I hit middle school, I had some, you know, I started to make like new friends that like weren't just in my little neighborhood. You know, you get older, you can like hop on your bike and go a few neighborhoods over. And that was when I got to start like checking out like Nitro or Raw with some friends, because it was, you know, friends that live just close enough that I could be out that late at their house and see a little of it, because it was never going to be on the TV at my house.
Mm-hmm.
My parents knew they were in over their heads with my brother and I. For those who haven't seen me in the ring, I am 6'3" and I weigh 245 pounds. I'm a big guy, and my brother is just as big, and we've always been big. Like, even when we were little, we were big. And my mom is 5'0". My dad is like 5'5", maybe.
Wow.
Like, they're just little bitty people. We got all the genetics from my mom's side. All our uncles over there are like 6'10". Like, we're short on that side of the family.
Wow.
So they were in over their heads with us. So anything that had violence, anything that seemed like replicable, they wanted us far away from. They did not want to have to worry about these, their two kids that could take the house down if they had to, butting heads. And rightly so. I think I understand where their concern came from. Damn. But that was sort of like what led me into being really interested in wrestling. And I think there was something about it not being allowed at my house that made it real appealing too. You know, it was sort of it's the same reason my friends and I watched Beavis and Butthead. Like, we knew our parents didn't approve.
Right.
And then, you know, growing up in the Northeast, me and my friends could kind of try that stuff out, because every winter we basically had a safe place to bump all around the yard, because snow is a great cushion.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, me and my friends, you know, kind of almost building like the snow fort equivalent of wrestling rings, and then playing like, you know, King of the Mountain, where we would, we didn't plan out who was winning, but like, if someone grabbed you and hooked you for a move and you knew what it was, you just went with them, because who cared? We were just goofing around.
Absolutely.
And I think that stayed in my head. I you know, get to high school and I'm in punk bands and I'm in theater. When I finished high school, I was in a touring punk band. We did 2 summers of Warped Tour. All the while, you know, I started college and I started theater there, but I'm no longer like the little kid that I was when I was doing theater. I'm now 6'3" and at the time, 300 pounds, and not a good 300 pounds, to be clear. I'm gigantic. And I'm being told by, college theater professors, like, yeah, you're good. You're a very talented actor. You can sing like crazy, but we can't have you starring opposite our female lead, because she's 4'10" and practically looks like a child. And you're this giant man child that's going to look really weird and be upsetting to people. So I quickly became disillusioned with theater. And some friends kind of were like, well, you always liked wrestling, and that's basically just theater for gorillas. Like, maybe look into it. And me and some friends started watching from a very critical, like, performance-minded eye, watching wrestling every week during college. And I went to, like, 1 or 2 little indie shows right at the end of college, right before I graduated. Me and some friends would go out to them, and I asked the ring announcer where I could get trained. And he knew the only school at the time in Western Massachusetts, that was Kevin Landry's wrestling school out here. I believe they still exist, but I never hear about them, and I don't ever meet anyone who graduates from there. But I'm told they still exist. Went there and trained, and that's the through line from elementary school Sega Genesis to taking a first bump in the ring.
That's so fascinating too, because I feel like everybody's first or earliest memory of wrestling is always, you know, they saw Andre the Giant or something similar on TV. And for you, it's a video game. And I mean, obviously, like, you still play them. I mean, we still play them too. I mean, and like, there were so many of those games back in those days when we were kids, like No Mercy for me. Like, if you didn't watch wrestling or really know wrestling, you knew No Mercy and you played the shit out of it still. Like, it's kind of interesting how yours is different from, I feel like, from how so many people answer that question when you watch other wrestlers being interviewed. So you mentioned that you, went to Kevin Landry's training school, got trained there. So according to the Cage Match profile, it lists Kevin Landry, Johnny Idol, and Antonio Thomas as, your trainers. Are those all accurate?
Yes, although it's a wildly incomplete list. And also, in 2025, no one would know who Antonio Thomas was anymore, because he's now uses the ring name Thomas Santel, and he is one of the two head trainers for the Beyond Wrestling School.
Okay, cool.
He did everything. If you remember a tag team in WWE called the Heartthrobs,
sure.
He was one half of the Heartthrobs.
Okay.
It was him. He was at the time Antonio Thomas, and his partner was Romeo Roselli. And they came out with feather boas, and I think on the indies they entered It's Raining Men, and in WWE they got something kind of like similar ish.
Sure.
So that was he sort of became the head trainer while I was there, because he had just come back, like he'd been let go and then did a tour of Japan and then came to our school. Which is where he trained originally, but came back to be a trainer. So he sort of took over the classes. But Johnny Idol was the guy that took me out on the road and got me all my initial bookings when I was new. And he would sub in on training classes if other people didn't make it. Kevin owned the school, but like so many guys who own wrestling schools, I think maybe three classes he ever ran while I was there. He was a good trainer, but he had other stuff going on. And then he had a local guy named Aaron Morrison, who was essentially running the school for him, that trained, did most of the classes. That was my sort of East Coast trainers. But about a year and a half in, I moved to California. And when you're that new, you're not established, and people, you don't move out there and people are going, oh, we can't wait to book this guy, he's a big star. That wasn't the case. The way you get in is you find a school that also runs a show and you start training there. So I went to the, there's one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. I went to the West Coast Big Time Wrestling, that at the time was owned and run by Kirk White. And that's where I trained out there. I trained under Jason Styles, who was a great hand and a great guy. But that's also where I trained alongside a brand new to the business, Erin Solo, and also still in her first year at the time, a very young Bailey.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, one of my oldest friends in wrestling is also one of the wealthiest individuals in wrestling.
Is that somebody you keep in touch with ever still?
Like once, twice a year, we text. Like if she does something really cool, or when she has her match at Mania, I'll usually text her. But otherwise, it's been a really long time. I mean, that was, I think 2012 was the last time we were ever on a show together.
Wow.
It's been a long time. Like, we've seen each other since then. If she like comes through like somewhere where I'm also like wrestling that weekend, we'll try to meet up for food or something, but
sure.
She's got her own life now.
Yeah. I'd say she's a little busy, huh?
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways we all are,
Of course.
Like how many friends from 12 years ago that you don't live in proximity to do you see, right?
This is like the only one.
I'm one of those people that like stays in touch with everybody, but the older I grow, the more I realize most people aren't that way. So I'm just weird, I guess.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of different trainers, and you kind of came up in a couple different spots. If you were to forget everything wrestling right now, and you had to relearn and retrain, what would you change about your training as compared to when you got trained originally?
I would pay a lot more attention. I paid attention to everything. I absorbed everything like a sponge and took all my trainers just like their words as gospel. If I could go back and tell me right before I started anything, it would be listen to them about what you're doing physically and like how to stay safe. But when it comes to things like psychology, where to get booked, how to work, how to present a character, how to market yourself, how to sell merch, maybe take a closer look at your trainers and see how much money they've made and think it over.
Sure.
Because They all had a very old school mentality where they said, "Oh, you're going to be a heel because you're good. You know, you can command the ring really well. You're going to be a heel. That means no merch. That means don't ever like, don't even come out of the curtain. Don't say hi to the audience. Don't see anybody. Just hide out. You're a heel." And then they would say, "Oh, like one of the things that really drove me nuts early on," they said, "you know, the less you do in a match, the better. You know, don't go out there and do everything under the sun. Don't do a bunch of big, cool stuff. The best matches in the world are the ones where the least happens." And their shining example of that always was Andre and Hogan. They did nothing, but they made the most money. And like, I don't know, that might have been true 10 years before they were training me even, which, you know, puts you close to 30 years ago. That might have been true then. But even by the time I was training, that wasn't true. And I was a, you know, 22-year-old kid fresh out of college. I didn't know any better than to pay attention to them. Otherwise, like now, I'd objectively look at it and go, well, these guys have never wrestled outside of the state that they were born in. Apart from Antonio, Thomas Santel, apart from him, none of them have ever been signed. None of them have ever left the country to wrestle. None of them are recognizable outside of the two promotions they work for. I'm not going to listen to them.
Sure.
And I wish I'd known that sooner.
Sure. Sure. I guess, yeah. When you're young, you don't know any better. I mean, what else are you going to do other than just listen to the people that tell you, oh, listen to me, you know? And I think that's just something that comes with age is the more perspectives, the better. And you can kind of pick apart what makes sense to you and what doesn't. And I guess everybody's probably a little different that way.
Yeah. And it's a tough thing in wrestling too, because by the time you start to hit the age where you can wisen up and go, I don't know if I'm going to listen to these guys, you're kind of past what's considered like the prime age in wrestling.
Sure. Sure.
So kind of a bummer to not have like your brain just right and a nice, young, healthy body that you're working inside of.
Sure. And real quick, I got to touch on this because I saw this in your cage match profile. Who is Andy Licious?
Yeah, so early on, Perry Von Vicious is the name that I used since my first match. And it was because I was initially like a rich snob heel with an ascot and a monocle and everything. And that was the character. I went to a show and the promoter said, "Hey, we need you to go out and be a babyface tonight." And he told me like, while I'm behind the curtain, my opponent's already gone through the curtain. So I have like no time. And I was like, okay. And he goes, "Yeah, great. But your name doesn't work." And I said, "Well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm already in gear and it says Vicious in giant letters across the butt. So what are we doing?" And he goes, "Well, your opponent likes to milk his entrance. So you got a few minutes to figure it out." And I said, "All right, I'll be Vicious." And then I thought my brother's name is Andy. So it's like, I'll be Vicious Andy Licious. It just kind of just the English major in me that loves puns and dumb wordplay. It just clicked instantly. And so I was Vicious Andy Licious. And I wrestled under that name, I think, twice. I want to say it was like two matches or two or three. And it was for some little company that didn't film their shows. And, you know, it was like all charity events. You know, one of those things where I'm in my first year in the business. I'm just lucky to have any booking. Vicious Andy Licious is a character who is more or less lost to time. I think somewhere deep on my YouTube, I have a couple matches where I use that name. But, you know, again, they're from 16 years ago.
No, we got to try to find those. We should have played them during this.
I mean, if you find early Perry stuff, I am unrecognizable in every way. Again, when I started training, I was 300 pounds. 300 pounds, fully clean shaven. My hair dyed a lot brighter than it is now. And again, rich snob character that came out in a suit with an ascot and a monocle.
That's awesome. Absolutely awesome. So kind of shifting from the beginning of wrestling to your early memories of monster trucks, because obviously you've been using the human monster truck gimmick sort of for a while. What was your earliest memory instead of wrestling now? Monster trucks. How did you discover monster trucks? What kind of stuck with you when you first discovered it. Talk to us a little bit about the beginning interest of monster trucks.
So this one goes back way further than the wrestling did. You know, the wrestling, I would have been 7 or 8 at the time. I was 2 years old, and at my babysitter's, there was another kid my age. And one day he brought in a VHS tape that his parents had recorded off television. And it was the entirety of the event, Return of the Monster Trucks.
Oh my God. Yes. yes.
The classic. First ever televised side-by-side monster truck racing.
What a classic VHS.
The classic, Frankenstein, Blue Thunder, Roland, Roland Thunder, Blue Thunder, Frankenstein, Monster Vet, Bigfoot, Awesome Kong 2, Michigan Ice Monster, USA 1. The classic, like...
The other two have really no laid, idea what's happening, right? No, they have no clue. I'm loving it.
This laid such a foundation for, like, everything I understood about, like, being in front of an audience. Seeing, like, a packed Superdome for this whole event, and you know, then they would flash like quick little glimpses at other events around the country that were also packed. It was such a formative moment in my childhood. We borrowed a neighbor's VCR to stack on top of our VCR, and borrowed the tape from the kid at my babysitter so my parents could make a copy. And then I watched that tape so many times that it stopped playing right, and they had to do it again. I watched that thing so much as a little kid that I didn't see it again. You know, I was probably, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 the last time I had watched it. You know, by then it had been 4 years of watching it over and over. 5 or 6 was the last time I'd watched it. Well, the world was shut down in 2020, so that would make me 36 at the time. I discovered that it was on Amazon Prime and was like, oh, cool. I hit play. And my wife had to point out to me that I was doing it. I was saying lines along with it while it was playing. So like 30 years later, having not seen any of it in that time, I'm sitting in front of my computer just out loud, just saying stuff along with the announcer. And like, they'd cut away to like little music video segments, and I'd be humming along with the song because I knew it. And it, you know, it'd be like some random song that was never used for anything else in the history of media. That was the first time for me. And then, you know, obviously, again, my parents being like not wrestling people, they were definitely not monster truck people either. I always joke with my dad that they've got to be so confused about how I grew up with the love of the redneck arts. Like, being into wrestling and monster trucks just doesn't track with my family at all. So I watched that like crazy, came home, and it was all I would talk about, just monster trucks, monster truck, monster truck. My parents didn't even know what it meant. They finally took me out to a toy store in our town. And my mom had to ask the person behind the counter, my kid's talking about monster trucks. Do you even know what this means? They said, oh, yeah. And they walked us over, and on the pegs was the Matchbox Superchargers, which had Bigfoot and USA 1 and Rollin' Thunder and a bunch of the trucks from the tape I'd watched.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, that also led to my love of toy making and toys, which has informed a great deal of my adult life.
Incredible. And we got Phil Vicinanza here in the YouTube comments as well. Phil runs the Monster Truck Collecting Facebook group. I hear he also runs internet, but hi Phil, I hope you're still here. Please feel free to ask any questions to Perry if you would like. But man, that's funny that it's so funny that back then, like, people didn't know what monster trucks were. And that's not to say you're old or anything, but I mean, it's so crazy because like everybody, you know, growing up, everybody knows of Gravedigger and Bigfoot and you know, all that stuff, even if they don't follow it, just household names in pop culture, I guess you could say.
Absolutely.
So along with that, I see, you frequent shows every now and then. I know you've gotten the chance to see some pretty cool names from your childhood recently, like Monster X shows and whatnot. Recently discovered your vlog from, I believe, when you went to an All-Star show, I believe it was last year. You hung out with Brian Wagner, probably like a Chuck Plumlee, whoever else he probably had there. I don't know if Stacy would have been there. And I've done quite a few shows for Wagner back when he did a lot of shows up in Wisconsin still. And it's such a laid back environment, such a great group of people. It really doesn't get any better, but you got to drive a monster truck for the first time in that video. Coincidentally, I have driven that same truck. The second time I had ever driven a truck. I believe the week before that, I drove the Warrior Ride truck, which was Pablo's first Gravedigger. So like that was super cool, nice. Obviously. And then the second week, Brian's like, oh, hey, do you want to take Identity Theft for a spin? I'm like, yeah, of course. And it's super cool truck. It's a little different than a lot of trucks are because your rear steer is on the left instead of the right. And it's one of those preference things, but you know, the rear steer switch flips opposite way of what a lot of people might expect. So how was it driving a monster truck for the first time?
So I'll address the rear steer first. That's actually the same direction that I set mine up in Beam. So that was real easy for me.
That's like the old school way. I think really a lot natural. Of people used to do it because it makes sense. If you think about it, that's actually the direction you're turning the tires.
Yeah, that's exactly my logic as I'm kicking the switch the direction I want the back of the truck to go. Mm-hmm. So that part was easy. It's technically not the first time I've driven a monster truck. It's just the first time I've driven one as an adult.
Okay.
Growing up in Greenfield, Massachusetts, the original owners of the American Guardian truck were in that town. And they were family friends. This was, I found out years later, didn't realize it at the time. That truck had previously been Wildfire 1. And then right before that, it was Buffalo Tremor 3, the one with the coilovers.
Oh, okay, sure.
So it's a truck that had a great history and was even the same body. They had just repainted the body every time.
Wow.
So I actually learned to drive because it's weird. That was one of the last stick shift monster trucks ever made. And so it was like full on like clutch and shifting, in that truck.
I can't,
that
imagine.
Is the truck that I learned to drive stick shift on that monster truck.
That's insane.
Out behind the garage that the family friends owned.
Wow.
They taught me with the little travel tires on it. And, I got to drive it with the big tires one time just for like a quick lap around their backfield. But every time it was, you have to do this real slow. 'Cause the owner, Dan, would come and be with me while I drove it, but it was a center seat, you know, set up for one person to be in it. So he would stand with his feet on the roll cage, holding inside the body, showing me what to do as I inched along. And if I got going too fast and it shook me to go, whoa, 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 and I'd have to like stop. And which makes sense. I was 13 at the time.
Sure.
So yeah, I'd have been a little iffy too if I was him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, so yeah, many years later getting to drive one actually on a track and, you know, one that was a more modern version. It was awesome. And my whole crew that was with me, I was actually up for two wrestling bookings up in Maine when that happened. I had one Friday night and one Saturday night, so we went to the Saturday afternoon. We didn't even know there was a show going on. Me and a carload of wrestlers are headed up to Maine. And right before our exit, I kind of just glanced up from my phone. I'm in the back seat on my phone. I look up and I go, did anyone just see a monster truck? And they were all like, yeah, you see monster trucks everywhere. Whatever, man. I was like, I don't know. And so I pull up Apple Maps and I see there's a Speedway right there. And I was like, well, it says there's a Speedway. And and the first Google pictures that come up are from other monster truck events that have been there. And I was like, oh, there's got to be something going on. So I quickly look him up and go, hey, there's a show tomorrow afternoon, guys, let's go. And I told everyone, like, oh, it'll be my treat, like figuring I would just, you know, it's cheap, it's a Speedway show, it's not going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. And they all kind of said like, yeah, sure, we'll see if Randy, who owns Limitless Wrestling up in Maine, which is one of the biggest indie companies in the country, we were staying at his house. He helps run a bunch of other companies up there, so he was on production for the shows we were on. And I said, yeah, we'll see if Randy wants to go. This will be great. And we asked him, and you know, he, of course, was like, oh, yeah, we're doing that. So we go and we do our show that night. I get blasted in the face. We all thought my nose was broken. Terrible night at the office. Go back to their place. You know, everyone stays up till 3 or 4 in the morning watching wrestling and shouting at the TV. Caught like 4 hours of sleep before we had to get up and get breakfast if we were going to make it over in time for the pit party. And as we're in line for me to buy tickets for everybody, a voice that I'd never heard before says, "Hey, are you Perry Von Vicious?" And this has happened to me at a lot of monster truck shows now. But this was the first time I had other wrestlers with me to actually see it. So like they've heard me say this happens. They'd never seen it.
Now they believe you.
And yeah. And so I go, yeah. And I turn and it's Chuck Plumlee and he's wearing his whole attire for like the show. You know, he's all done up in all-star monster truck. He's got the lanyard and everything.
God, I love Chuck.
And he kind of looks, he's the best. Absolutely. He looks the crew of us up and down and he goes, "You guys didn't buy tickets already or anything, right?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "All right, cool. Come with me." He just walks us past the front gate and walks us right to a table and goes, "Yeah, we need VIP passes for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these 5. Wow. And just walked us in, marched us past the line of people waiting to go on the ride truck and goes, "Yeah, you guys should go for a ride. Go on." Just waved us up and we went for a ride. Then he had me do the "Gentlemen, Start Your Engines" to kick the show off, which was pretty cool.
Fantastic.
And in the middle of the show, he came to us and said, "Hey, do you want to drive the ride truck like after the crowd clears out?" And I kind of told him like, "Well, I don't actually know if we're staying till the end of the show. Like, I got my pictures already. I got a bunch of clips for the vlog already. And we have a show we have to get to that we're kind of helping to run." And as I'm starting to say that, Randy from Limitless, who is the kingpin of Maine wrestling, no wrestling show happens in Maine without him kind of telling them to do it, just looked at me and he goes, "Oh, if you're driving that thing, we're not going anywhere. The show will wait for us."
That's incredible.
And so I was like, "Yeah, you know, that's true. It doesn't matter if I'm late to the show. I'm in the main event. Like, I'm not on till the end." Cool. And so when we went down, the whole crew got to come on. Randy, my buddy Johnny Torres, who he graduated wrestling school with me. Now he's a commentator all these years later. So he's been with me since the beginning. My buddy ZPB, who started wrestling a year or two ahead of me and was actually my first ever singles match back in 2008. And he was there and got to ride along with some of the like IWTV production guys. So it was just like a very cool experience to have like a load of your wrestling friends in the truck while you got to drive it around the track. It's very cool.
It's very special that they got to experience the gimmick, which probably wasn't much of a gimmick. That was real life. That's real life for Perry. Hey Schwartz, I got a question for you. If I could. What's it like to be the only one on the show currently that hasn't driven a monster truck? Just wondering. Because George got to do it at my wedding.
It was pretty fun.
Anyway. Well, I mean, it shows that you're a bad friend, so.
Well, anyway.
Well, you'll have to come up in the future.
Absolutely.
I would love to.
We can make it happen. I know of a truck that has a bunch of tacos all over it. And
what time is it?
I believe it's crunch time.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hell yeah.
So we gotta get Perry Von Vicious at Throwdown, Monster Truck Throwdown, of course.
Please.
Man, I'm telling you, like Mount Pleasant or, you know, there's a couple other big shows we do. I know we don't go to the Northeast a whole lot anymore, but man, it's a good time. We'll make it happen. We'll get you some bookings around here or something also. Nice. Phil Vincenanza in the comments says, "Schwartz can drive at your next..." Oh, I'm not going to have a next wedding, you prick. anyways. Okay, so... so we've talked wrestling. We've talked a little bit of monster trucks. Let's talk about how you combine the two. How did you come up with the human monster truck, and how did you introduce it to the wrestling world?
So my persona had started to evolve as more or less as my body had started to evolve. I started off sort of pear-shaped. I had sort of a King Kong Bundy kind of build early on. And then in 2010, I lost 110 pounds in 10 months. And I dropped down to 190. Which made me look a little sickly. started working hard, putting some muscle back on, got up to about 200. And at the time I was a full-time elementary school teacher and my kids were so polite as to give me the worst stomach flu I've ever had in my life. And I lost 15 pounds in 72 hours.
Ooh,
my goodness. Put me at 185, the lightest I've been as an adult. It's an effective weight loss strategy, but not one I recommend. And then over the ensuing 10 years after that, building muscle is a slow process. And I went from very fat to incredibly skinny to now what I look at, where I borderline look like an athlete, depending on your opinion of how an athlete should look. it was somewhere right around 2018. I'd been back on this coast for about a year and a half and had put on some good size, and I had been wrestling constantly against a guy at the time known as Tomahawk. We had one match against each other that people went nuts for. And after that, every place wanted to book us against each other. We wrestled each other in two different time zones in Canada. We wrestled each other in three different time zones in the US, something like nine different states, just constantly. And we were frankly kind of sick of it. Like we'd done 8-minute barn burners where we just went nuts for 8 minutes. And then we had one match that went almost a full hour. Like we did everything under the sun. We fought, we did regular, just bell to bell in the ring, hitting the ropes, running spots. We did fighting all over a giant carnival where we wound up fighting on top of the ring truck. You can see the Ferris wheel behind us. Really great imagery. He now, of course, is known as Iron Rip Bison, who was a former Limitless Wrestling champion. He and I got so sick of wrestling each other, we decided the only way to make sure that we didn't have to wrestle each other anymore was to start being a tag team.
Mad.
So, yeah, we became Mutually Assured Destruction, or MAD, which felt fitting since we were essentially calling a ceasefire in our own best interest. So Mutually Assured Destruction. At that point, the Rich Snob Perry didn't fit anymore. We wanted to present ourselves as heels. The audience never bought that for a second because we were two huge guys that chucked everyone around like maniacs, and they loved it. Rip is a few inches shorter than me, but legitimately will put 700 pounds on his yoke bar and walk it around his house for cardio. So he's a nut. He's insanely strong. He's a power lifter and a nutcase. Essentially, I had to find a new persona. I didn't want to change the name. I knew I wanted to keep Perry Von Vicious. I'd had it at that point for 13 years, so kind of hard to get rid of it. Instead, I started thinking about, like, for a long time, I joked that because I was Von Vicious, that Sid Vicious was my uncle. So I joked for a long time that Psycho Sid was my uncle, and started being billed as Uncle Sid's favorite nephew, Perry Von Vicious. Yes. And I was sort of like, I had short hair at the time and I would spike it. And I came out with the vest like Sid. And that was okay, but it wasn't natural. And we'd been teaming a lot, so it was fine that it wasn't a great character because the team was kind of the character. And then COVID hit and the world shut down. And there were no bookings to be had, nothing to do. I did one closed studio taping while the world was shut down. It was September of 2020 for Limitless Wrestling, where they would have a bunch of wrestlers come up and you would only wrestle the people that rode in your car. So you had sort of a bubble. You had to keep a mask on unless you were in the ring and the cameras were rolling. And they had a maximum number of wrestlers who could sit around ringside in seats that you were not allowed to move. It was very, very regimented, very responsible considering. So I went and wrestled there, and that was the last appearance of Uncle Sid's favorite nephew, because when I came home and those matches started to air, was the first time I realized COVID being shut down did wonders for my body. I looked incredible. Like, I put on some real muscle lifting in my basement at home with nowhere else to go. And I could plan all my meals and cook my meals as my day went, 'cause I didn't have to drive to work anymore. I had my oven right there. And so I was looking at it, I was going, wow, I look huge. I might need to come up with something better than this not working Sid's nephew thing. And someone shared a GIF from one of the matches as it aired on IWTV, where I just obliterated the guy I was in the ring with at the time was Kaiju Big Battle's American Beetle, who was also the same guy who was Kaiju Big Battle's Dr. Cube. Now he's better known to the wrestling world as Dr. Redacted, who is a insane deathmatch wrestler who's been all over the world and one of my dearest friends. He's actually going to be on the GCW podcast tonight at like 11 p.m. or something like that. People should check that out.
Oh, we'll have to do that.
Because this will be done by then and my stream will be done by then. So everyone can tune into that if they want.
Excellent.
I just demolished him with one move, and someone had retweeted it and said something like, wow, just crushed him. And so I took a screen grab of that whole thing so it would all be captured at once. And just thinking like those dumb old Ultimate Warrior promos where he just said inane nonsense, I just retweeted it in all capitals with no punctuation of any type. I wrote, I am Perry Von Vicious and I am a human monster truck. And thought nothing of it. I wasn't going to change gimmicks. I wasn't going to change characters. It was just a dumb tweet because we were all stuck at home. And that's all we could do. And I woke up the next morning and I had north of 15 DMs from people I know in wrestling with that tweet attached saying, you need to keep that. That's really good. Wow. And so I thought like, I'll do something with that. And I was kind of thinking about it. And right around the time the world started to open back up, I rode up to Limitless and Danhausen was there. He was doing a seminar for the Limitless kids on developing characters and marketability, those kinds of things. And like he and I knew each other a little bit. We'd been in some matches together, in the years leading up to that. And I asked him like, hey, I'm kind of thinking of doing this like monster truck gimmick, but I have no idea what it even like looks like. Like if I need to change my look or my outfit or anything. And his eyes lit up and he just said,
hi, Cheeto.
You could make a lot of merch money with monster trucks.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that was the only thing he said to me about it. And he's 1,000% right. Cause I also during COVID took up 3D designing and 3D printing. So I do have a series of Perry Von Vicious Hot Wheels scale monster trucks that I've sold at shows. The t-shirts, because they have monster trucks and stuff on them, sell like crazy.
Kids love monster truck shirts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even my 8x10, you go down a merch table at a wrestling show and it's guy flexing, guy snarling, mm-hmm. guy looking angry, guy doing this thing. Mm-hmm. It's all those over and over. It's just some dude's face. You get to mine and there's a giant monster truck with me next to it. And that's the one the kids want.
Absolutely. And
I mean, even the grownups.
Yeah. And that's such a good point too. And I think a lot of people, the way that I view monster trucks, and I've been doing it for over 10 years now, and you really realize like a lot of ways, a lot of promotions are just marketing companies to get people in to sell them merch. It's the business side isn't about the show. It's about getting people in to buy merchandise. And that's a big piece of the business. And there's a lot of teams that rely on those merch sales and a lot of promotions that rely on those merch sales. So I think that's a really great point, because that's a great parallel between the two different types of entertainment businesses that we're dealing with here.
And they're definitely similar worlds,
Very.
The teams, the individuals who market themselves the best, often it's because they're connecting the best with their audience. And that's who's going to end up making the most money.
And that's why there are so many trucks like El Toro Loco or Monster Mutt or on the independent side, even you got a lot of those. Like you got Frostbite now. You got Kylie Kenton and Aspen.
First one that came to mind.
Yep. Kylie Kent,
who
is awesome. Shout out Send It Motorsports. Crazy Train is now on the Monster Jam first quarter circuit. So, I mean, it's The two are so similar in so many ways. One being that they are somewhat marketed as competitions, even though they're not. But merch sales are huge for both of them. And it's crazy how similar they are. And a lot of people that like monster trucks also like wrestling. And that's kind of hard to explain, but the two are just so similar to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the umbrella term that WWE has clung to so much, sports entertainment, monster trucks are kind of just motorsports entertainment.
Absolutely.
It's the same idea. Just instead of combat, it's in the world of racing.
Correct. And there's definitely competition that, between the people in the back, probably similarly, maybe there is in a sense between the boys in the back and, you know, at any show that you might go to, but all in all, I mean, everybody's getting paid, some a little bit more than others, depending on, you know, how well they perform and how much merch they sell. And so, I mean, it's very similar that way too, probably.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very fascinating stuff. So obviously, you know, seen a lot of clips of your promos. You play an old school monster truck clip from the 80s or 90s and whatever it may be. You kind of go into your promo in front of the green screen there. So obviously you are leaning a lot on old school monster trucks to make Perry Von Vicious tick, the human monster truck. What inspirations do you pull from wrestling to make the human monster truck go?
There's a huge influence from the Road Warriors. That sort of like, they just feel so much larger than life to me. Like, you know what, everyone in wrestling, they talk about the Road Warrior pop, because it didn't really matter where they showed up, how much fanfare they were given ahead of time. If their music hit, any version of their music hit in any country in front of any audience, the roof came off. And there's something to be said for presenting yourself huge that way. And you can see it in their promos, where they just, the second the mic goes in front of them, they spring to life. I try to get a little of that going on my promos in front of the green screen. Even in like a presentation in front of an audience, I try to have some of that. Like I want to seem bigger. Like I'm a big guy, but I want to seem bigger. So it's the reason that when I come through the curtain, if you ever see a clip of me wrestling, it's both arms in the air, hands open wide, just huge, because anything I can do to seem bigger than what they expect, I think, really leaves an impression. And I mean, even for quite some time, I don't really wear it as much now, but like I would have a vest or a vest with a leather jacket under it, and the vest is covered with spikes, and on the back has a huge monster truck, and like just it's, you know, covered with huge things to make me look crazy. You know, and it's not just the little metal spikes like the biker spikes like you think of; those are on there. But I also like 3D printed my own sort of like kaiju Godzilla spikes that are all on it, and you know, I just and you see that with the Road Warriors; that's the shoulder pads they wore out to the ring and everything. You know, mm-hmm. you wanna stand out. For a long time, when I would, because I was asked to run seminars for, and I still do sometimes, because different characters I had always did well. And that was the thing that schools would have me teach their students, was like, you know, teach them a little bit about how to find a character. Like they all think they have a character, but none of them do. And they were right. And I would tell them, like, little kid comes to a local indie wrestling show on a Friday. He's going to see 7 to 10 matches, because that's how indie shows go. No one knows when to say no. So there's 10 matches sometimes. And in those matches, some of them are going to be scrambles. There's going to be rumbles. There's going to be 6-man tags, 8-man tags, tag matches, singles. They could see north of 40 wrestlers that night. I mean, 20 minimum. You know, I think the smallest show I've been on in the States in the last decade probably had 12 people. And it was a pro wrestling grind show where they explicitly said, we're doing 4 matches and that's it. You know. It's a lot of characters. So there's so many that come through. 10-year-old kid comes to that show on a Friday night, spends 2 hours seeing 20 to 40 people. When they go to school Monday, are they going to tell their friends about the guy that looked like a wrestler? Might have had a catchy name, but just looked like a wrestler. and did wrestling things, which is most wrestlers? Or is he going to say, oh, there was this rich dickhead with a with a monocle and an ascot and tearaway pants, and when he tore him off, he was pale as a sheet of printer paper, and man, did he get his butt kicked. That's what they're going to remember. The human monster truck comes out with a monster truck on the back of his vest covered in spikes, throwing people around, and then when you went to the merch table, he had monster truck toys everywhere. They're going to remember that. And yeah, that's, I would try to impress that upon people, like, yeah, get good at what you're doing, be yourself, but not if yourself is boring.
Sure. Sure. I'm boring. So I would,
I think I got you beat.
Yeah. Shorts. You're pretty boring, right?
No, I'm not like you guys.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Very busy man.
I mean, truth be told, outside of my public persona, I am fairly boring as well.
So I guess to that point, so that's kind of what you pull on from the wrestling world to make Perry Von Vicious work. What are some things you do in ring, or what's a good way to ask this? Because it's weird. It's a weird question that will probably never be said in a sentence ever again. What do you use as inspiration from the monster truck world as you're wrestling? It's like in-ring movements. What are you pulling from the monster truck side of things? Because when you're the human monster truck, I can only assume you probably had to make some changes to kind of help facilitate this new thing you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, it's not for individual moves. The moves I do are not selected to necessarily reflect monster trucks. But the types of moves, or the way that I portray my physicality in the ring, is directly from monster trucks, because I try to keep one thought in mind when I'm thinking about how I'm going to wrestle. Because I could go out and I could do a bunch of technical wrestling. I was trained to do all of it. I just spent last year, I spent 3 months in Japan training with Tajiri. I learned all kinds of crazy great technical stuff. And I can do complicated pins. I can do complicated submissions. I can run, lucha spots. I trained lucha for years in California. I can do springboards and all these things. But at the end of the day, is anyone going to the monster truck show? Is anyone buying a ticket to Monster Jam to see someone parallel park?
I mean,
you're not watching a monster truck for skills. There is the skills competition, but really, you're kind of just hoping they crash.
Don't get me started, like, man. That's really a whole nother podcast.
This is the philosophy, is you're there to see them wreck something. You're there to see them go fast. You're there to see them like just push the machine to its limits and cause some destruction. So that's what I do in the ring. I charge at people and squash them in the corner. I pick them up and chuck them recklessly. I'll run and dive over the top rope at somebody. I mean, I've had a list for a while, and when the time comes where I have a little more time to mess around making a highlight reel, I do have like a list of like what things you see monster trucks do that could easily be reflected in a move that I do. Like I've done moonsaults. There's the backflip. When I do the Perry go around, I'm spinning a circle. That's donuts.
Sure.
There's all kinds of moves that I've done that feel like something you see a monster truck do, and it's entirely because my feeling was I'm 6'3", 240 pounds of being built arguably like an athlete. They're probably not all that interested in seeing an arm wringer. They want to see a power bomb. They want to see a choke slam. They want to see a gorilla press. They want to see me shoulder block someone so hard that they go flying out of the ropes onto the floor. So yeah, I try to keep that monster truck philosophy in my head when I'm putting together matches.
Absolutely. Man, I love it. I love all of this. Boys, I obviously want to be respectful of Perry's time here. Any other, quick questions you guys want to throw in there? I know we have just a few jotted down.
Shorts, you got anything right now? I had something earlier, but I forgot.
Oh, I do. Do you think you wrestle, I guess there's two parts. Do you think you wrestle better as a heel or face, and do you like, which one do you like wrestling?
I can only answer for 2025, Perry, because it's where I am now. I really like wrestling as a babyface. I like being able to, I feel like I command the audience in a very different way as a babyface, where if I hook for a move that they know that I do, I can stop and kind of look out and hear the people come up for it. That's really cool. Being able to come through the curtain and hear a roar as soon as I'm seen. And then once I've made my way closer to the crowd, I'll always look for an empty chair. Like if someone's got up to like go get a soda or something, I'll grab the chair and stand on it in the middle of a group of people and throw my arms in the air and hearing them come back up again. Really cool. Like it's such a hard thing to replicate like in another situation. Like I've done theater, I've toured in punk bands. I did stand up comedy, but like being able to just throw your arms in the air and the people just cheer because it's you. Pretty unreal. Pretty cool. I enjoyed wrestling as a heel. I felt like I had a lot of control in the matches in that role, but I don't miss it.
So who is your favorite opponent? Obviously, it's not going to be the guy that you tagged with after how many matches. Who won those pinfalls, by the way? Who had the most wins?
So in over 30 singles matches with each other, not even counting times we were in tag matches or triple threats and those things, in like 30-something matches, I won twice.
What?
Yeah. Crazy. One time I took a company's main belt off of him. I became a heavyweight champion, beat him for that. And the only other time that it was a singles was just some random match in a state where they didn't know us well and they needed the heel to go up in that match. So I got lucky one time. But other than that, Rip Bison holds a great streak over me. Although I will say, we were only on opposite sides of the ring one time while we were touring Japan, and I won that match.
See, in Japan, I feel like it has to be a little extra special.
And I mean, I was teaming with Tajiri in that match. So like, yeah, that's pretty good.
It's wild.
Yeah. Did you ever do the green mist?
So in that match, in that tag match, Rip got the green mist from Tajiri. And then a week later, me and Rip teamed with Tajiri against three good guys. It was our going away match, our last match in Japan before the end of the tour. And at the end, there was a miscommunication where Rip got the red mist from Tajiri. Tajiri got bumped out of the ring, and then Rip got pinned by the good guys. And I got in at the end mad at Tajiri and goozled him. And when I picked him up for a choke slam and had him in the air, he hit me with the green mist from up in the choke slam.
Oh, man, Christmas mist in this match. Red and green. Goodness.
Yeah. Oh, we couldn't get in front of a camera backstage fast enough to get the picture of both of us covered with the mist together. That was pretty great.
It's special.
Yeah, and he owed us because I mean I don't know how much kayfabe I'm supposed to break, but when Americans go over to wrestle for Kyushu Pro, Tajiri reaches out to you ahead of time and tells you the brand of food coloring he uses for his mists, and it's not available over there. Oh. So he asks you to please pick up a few boxes of it for him to bring over. So technically we brought him the mist he hit us with.
I kind of wish we lived in a country where we didn't have food coloring available, but here we are.
I mean, they have it available. Just theirs stains worse, I think is what he was telling us. He was saying the it's just the McCormick, the kind that we all picture.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like the only food coloring.
It's got the little gnome hats as lids.
Gnome.
Yeah, and that stuff apparently doesn't stain, and I can attest it didn't stain too bad.
Nice.
None of my gear got messed up, but even after a lot of careful face washing, there was definitely still some green on me for the drive back to the company house after the show.
Excellent.
Where was your favorite promotion to wrestle at? If you want to do that, you don't have to.
I have a lot of favorites. The experience of wrestling for Kyushu Pro in Japan was really wild and just a great experience in every way. Like so professional. It looked it looked like wrestling you see on TV. It didn't look like an indie. So that was really cool. And the crowds, I mean, I think the smallest crowd we wrestled for them was like 800 people. And they were like apologizing to us. Like, we're so sorry. It's such a small house. And we're like, it was in a mall. We're like looking up three stories of people staring down at the ring. We're going, you're sorry? But that was our first match. And we're going, you're sorry about this? But yeah, the next day we had the next show that we did for them was the next day, and it was 1700. And they were like, this is more normal. Hmm. Okay, cool, man. So that was pretty cool. But really, like, if I'm to promote any places, it's my what I consider sort of my three home promotions. There's Pro Wrestling Grind that's out of East Hampton, Massachusetts, that is owned and operated by two of my closest friends in pro wrestling, Iron Rip Bison and his fiance, Delmi Exo, who is the MLW Women's Champion. The two of them own and operate Pro Wrestling Grind. Then just a little bit south of here in Enfield, Connecticut, is Blitzkrieg Pro, which is run by Jeremy Leary, who is another wrestler out here who graduated wrestling school with me. We had our first match the same night. It was the same match back in 2008. And then just a bit north of here up in Maine is Limitless Wrestling. And those are sort of my three home bases. I go all over. I go to all kinds of other places, but those are the three that, like, I clear my calendar. I don't miss those shows. Those places really matter to me.
Kind of like someone I know with monster trucks.
What's that supposed to mean?
You're gone every week.
That happens, yes. I know. Trust me, I know. My wife loves it too. Well, she likes getting to go with me sometimes, but she thinks monster trucks are stupid. But, like, I get that because they are.
Until she gets to drive one.
She has.
I know.
Yeah. She still thought it was stupid, and I still don't blame her. Yeah, anyways. Sorry, Shorts, did you have anything else outside of that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man. Well, so I guess last question. I know I asked you in one of your streams, and it doesn't sound like you follow modern wrestling too religiously, but of what you know is out there right now, if anything, what are you enjoying and what do you kind of think about the current landscape of mainstream wrestling in 2025? Because there's been a lot of that's changed even just very recently.
Yeah. And not following it closely. There's so little of it that I know. Someone in my Twitch chat just yesterday was telling me that Cody Rhodes and The Rock had something going on this weekend. And I was like, wow, The Rock's back on TV. And like, I had to be told that. In fact, the night, this is going to sound like so anti-wrestling, the night that Raw debuted on Netflix, I was like, yeah, I'm going to check it out. Cool. It'll be the first time I was an early era cable cutter. Like, I haven't had a television service in 15 years.
Same.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to turn it on and see. It'll be my first chance to watch like WWE television live and, you know, over a decade and a half. Cool. Mm-hmm. I turned it on, and because I wasn't subscribed to that insane like HD tier for Netflix, I was on the regular tier. It was unwatchable. Like, it looked like it was like a Nintendo game. It was
sort of
pixelated.
Wow.
Like, it kept freezing and the sound was bad. I'd had Netflix for 15 years at that point. I canceled my Netflix subscription 10 minutes into the debut of Raw. I was like, nope, I'm done with you guys. There's like three shows on here I care to watch, and most of them I can get totally legally somewhere else.
That's how Schwartz consumes his wrestling as well.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just done with this. As far as the stuff I'm actually enjoying, because, you know, again, I think almost everything televised in the States, I really don't keep up enough to know what's going on. I do enjoy what I see from AEW. You know, the drips and drabs I see online. The stuff I see from WWE seems like they're headed in pretty cool directions. Like, a lot of new young talent who are like really good, like, and creative and doing cool stuff. I like that a lot. I love the fact that some of these companies are starting to work together that otherwise in previous generations never would have. Mm-hmm. You know, the TNA WWE partnership is exciting.
Yep.
AEW New Japan is really exciting. Like, that's all that stuff is cool. Japan sort of has their own version of it now where all the companies have decided, screw it, we're all going to work together. So like Noah guys show up over in New Japan and New Japan guys show up on All Japan and Kyushu Pro guys show up in New Japan. Like, it's everyone's bouncing place to place. Like DDT shows up different places. There's girls from Stardom that are showing up for Tokyo Joshi Pro, like, all kinds of crossover. And that's to me the most exciting thing that's happening, because it was always so segmented before. And the idea that, oh, you work there, you're not here. Mm-hmm. Or you're over there, so these fans don't like you purely because you work over there. Like, pretty soon you're not going to be able to have that tribalism because everybody's going to be everywhere.
Right.
And that's pretty cool. Like, at that point, it's no longer, you're no longer having these weird like allegiances to companies. It now becomes an art form, where now it's maybe you like a certain style instead of just, oh, this guy has these three letters attached to him. I think that's really exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's super rad. So outside of that, I know we mentioned before, Perry does some streams on his own, on Twitch. So Perry, let them know all the socials, everywhere they can find you, any upcoming shows you got going on, the whole nine, the whole Perry Von Vicious gamut.
Sure, I am on all social medias with a few terrible exceptions that no one's on, but I'm on all the social medias that a normal sane person would be on, at Perry Von Vicious on all of them. You can get me Mondays and Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern. I stream on twitch.tv/Perry Von Vicious. And I'm pulling up my upcoming shows now. Let's see. All right, we're heading into March now. Coming up in March, I won't be at or on the show, but March 15th, Pro Wrestling Grind makes its return for the year following the winter hiatus in East Hampton. March 21st, I will be on Limitless Wrestling in Portland, Maine, their biggest show of the year, the Bissell Brothers Bash, at a huge arena, probably over 1,000 people at that. That'll be really great. March 29th, I will be on Blitzkrieg Pro in Enfield, Connecticut. And after that, there's just all kinds of dates. It kind of gets a little muddy, but Blitzkrieg Pro, Pro Wrestling Grind, and Limitless Wrestling, all of those should be checked out to find me. Also, youtube.com/Perry Von Vicious. I have vlogs that go up pretty regularly showing my travels to monster truck shows, to wrestling shows, to Disney parks, to different concerts, checking out all my favorite punk and ska bands and comedy and novelty artists when they come around, as well as maker videos. I do 3D printing and toy making, and I love to share that process online. You guys will enjoy. We've been talking some monster trucks. I took a body off of a modern Hot Wheels Bigfoot and 3D printed my own Matchbox Supercharger chassis for it.
Oh, that's so rad.
Complete with a little engine and a little driver in there. That's something I'm really proud of, doing customs like that. And that's actually what I'm going to be doing on stream later tonight at 9 p.m. on Twitch. I'm going to be on Tinkercad modeling up a Matchbox Supercharger style tractor puller.
Good chance I might pop in and check really that cool. out once I get finished up with all this. So everybody, make sure you check out Perry Von Vicious on all the socials. Check his Twitch stream tonight. He'll be making some monster truck toys. That's good stuff. Perry, we really, really appreciate your time. I'm sure I'll stay in touch with you one way or another. I think it'd be awesome to have you on the All Monster podcast once we get that relaunched here. And then hopefully at a throwdown show, especially. Maybe we could do an in-person retake of this. So really appreciate it, man.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Catch you later.
All righty. Take care.
See ya. Oh, boys. What do we think of the interview with Perry Von Vicious? He just dropped off. I thought it was pretty rad.
Pretty interesting.
It's very interesting. Just to talk to someone, like you said in the beginning, just to talk to someone that's been in the industry.
I mean, he did say he knows Bailey.
Yeah, he knows Bailey, came up with Bailey a little bit.
Maybe we can get her on the show.
I would say we're 1 degree separation from Bailey now.
Yeah, exactly. We're this close to Bailey now. Exactly what I was thinking.
Somebody tag her.
Oh, yeah, that was very cool.
My face looks awful on the stream right now.
Yeah, it does. It always looks awful though, so it's normal.
I hate you.
I'm all right.
Both.
What?
Nothing.
So Cheeto's still hanging out in this title belt. I don't know if anybody.
Yeah.
No, you can't see him. He crawled in there in the middle of the interview. He's still laying in there in a ball.
Did. Twice.
What an asshole. Well, I guess we'll work through a little bit of SmackDown and Raw really quick, and then do some final predictions for Elimination Chamber. So, my first question to both of you.
Yes.
George, What did you think of that Rock and Cody promo?
Fucking weird. Yeah, man, I want your soul. I don't want the belt. I want the soul.
I mean, I understood the point behind it.
Do you think he wants to turn him into, like, young corporate heel Rock? Yeah.
He wants corporate Cody. And I literally just got done saying from last week, I don't think Cody turns. I think he's good. And then, boom. It's like the Rock listened to me.
You know,
wanted to prove me wrong.
I kind of understand. I have no problems with the Rock coming out and being like, hey, I want you to, like, align yourself with me. I can give you the world, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
There was a great comparison that was made on, I think it was Bully on Busted Open, said something along the lines of, the devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 the whole thing, right? Well, it seems to line up very well. I mean, Cody's from Georgia. I think it's just a coincidence, but the greatest lie the devil ever told was that he didn't exist. And I think this could be a very interesting thing. I don't know. Shorts, what did you think of the whole promo?
It was wild that he just kind of came out. I sure as hell didn't even know he was going to talk like that or his promo was going to be like that at all. I thought he was just going to come up with something like, hey, you know, Mania, I don't care who you face. We're going to figure something out. I'm going to get that belt or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I have no idea where the hell that came from. And it adds such a good twist,
mm-hmm.
where if Cody were to take the bait and do it, he could have a 2-year title reign.
Yeah, we don't want that though. We don't want that.
I want corporate Cody. Oh my god, the heel Cody. Did you ever see his stuff when he left WWE and he was heel and Ring of Honor and things like that?
I saw clips of that. Yeah.
Heel Cody was good.
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 Remember when he tried to dye his hair black on Dynamite? Like, and he tried to be heel, and that lasted like 2 weeks. Not even.
Yeah.
Not to say that it wouldn't do well in WWE. I think it would do really, really well in WWE, especially with like the base that he's built now. You know, some of the mm-hmm. best heels were the best baby faces. But I don't have a problem with the possible direction of this. What I absolutely hated was I hated all of the back and forth of, oh, they're going to cheer me. Oh, they're going to boo me. So it's like, at one second he was saying, hey, thank you fans for making Moana 2 $1 billion or whatever the hell it was. But also like, you're all meth head trailer park trash. And like, he just kept going back and forth. Like I saw a quote that was that this guy turned more times in one night than the Big Show turned his whole career. I didn't get it. I didn't understand that. Like, what are we like? He comes out. He's like, I'm the final boss, but he wasn't always the final boss in that promo. He was being a kiss ass corporate, he was S in his own D most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you've confused me a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
So George summed it up, confusing. We can get into more about where we think this is going to go once we kind of break down Elimination Chamber more, but a couple more just SmackDown highlights, I guess, looking at, one of the second to last SmackDown before Elimination Chamber. Of course, the show started with Nick Aldis telling Cody he's no longer in this six-man match because The Rock wants to see him in the ring instead. So clearly this seems to have been a very last-minute thing because they were advertising this match and all of a sudden the match isn't happening, or Cody's not in it at least. Later on, we see Tiffany Stratton defeating Candice LeRae. Nia Jax comes out and attacks Tiffany. Trishy Time comes out and makes a save, but Nia and Candice overcome them. And then Charlotte, who is on commentary, just comes in as Tiffany is rolling around in pain and points at the WrestleMania sign. So nothing crazy here. Kevin Owens is outside of Sami Zayn's house and films him with his family through the window, asking Sami if he's thought about the family. Ask if he's considered the consequences of going against Kevin. If Kevin seriously hurts him, what about his family? He tells Sami he's selfish. I was kind of torn on what I thought about this particular segment and Kevin being outside of Sammy's house, because I feel like to this point, everything Kevin has been saying is true and it makes sense, and people should be on Kevin Owens' side more than they are. So I felt it was a little weird going to the house, because that wasn't like a very honest thing to do, I guess. I don't know.
I think after last week when we talked about Kevin Owens, I'm definitely feeling a lot of what he's saying and how true, like, everything that he says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've done a very good job with keeping Kevin, because he's been doing this for months now. They're keeping him true to his same character.
Yeah, I'm really liking everything they've done with Kevin and going against everybody that's tried to help Roman, because Roman, you know, he was the one king ruler, and now look at what's happening. And that's why a lot of people right now are going to be against Cody going with Rock, because it's like, oh well, we had a one ruler champion, like, who acted like a king, and they're worried that Cody might become something like that if he aligns himself with the Rock. So outside of that, that was kind of like everything related to the Elimination Chamber buildup that I wanted to touch on. And then for Monday Night Raw, most of it was, you know, a lot of Elimination Chamber buildup. There were some promo packages. There were some backstage things, et cetera, et cetera. So Raw started with Logan Paul coming out, doing a terrible promo. He says he's going to beat three doorknobs and John Cena.
Yeah, you kind of missed one.
Yeah, so yeah. As Pat McAfee said, the math doesn't math. There's six people in that match, you fucking idiot, not five. Anyways, he's interrupted by CM Punk. Punk basically, more or less, comes out and just obliterates him on the mic. And then Logan Paul says some more stupid shit, and he slaps CM Punk and then runs out like a little bitch. And you could see a little bit of blood even. That CM Punk let out of his mouth from that.
How mad were you after that?
Oh, it just made me more.
A good slap.
No, it did its job, and it made me excited to see CM Punk beat the shit out of Logan Paul.
Did you want to fight Logan Paul for CM Punk?
I think I could take him.
They're definitely going to start the match.
I think I could take him. I could take him and Jake Paul at the same time.
Oh, God.
No questions. No question. I got it. So anyways, I do like the buildup they're doing between people that are in these Elimination Chamber matches. Okay, make this one make sense.
No.
Lyra retains the IC title against Dakota Kai again.
What do you want to make sense?
I want it to make sense because it doesn't.
You think Dakota should have won?
Yeah.
They're giving her a second chance, yeah.
You know what I think would have made more sense? after the match is over, Ivy Nile attacked Lyra. Why didn't they use Ivy to cause a disqualification during the match? So Dakota's protected. She still loses, but she's protected. And now maybe you got a triple threat thing. And I mean, this still might be a triple threat thing, but Dakota Kai looks like she has no business being in another IC title match because she's lost to Lyra clean twice now with the belt on the line.
Yeah.
I mean, they could just, her and the other one could just go after the tag team belt.
Her and the other one.
I
Kairi Sane, is that it?
Yeah, I think Kairi's out for possible injury. But why wouldn't they just put like Ivy Nile beating Dakota Kai for the number one or contender and then have her lose and then set something else up again? You just give Lyra more wins, but you also kind of stagger Dakota Kai in there.
Yeah, I don't get it because I think the crowd's definitely behind Dakota, and I think they have been for a while, and I think it made sense to do it, and I thought they were going to do it, and they didn't.
Right.
So, I don't know. Afterwards, we got Jackie Redmond backstage interviewing Sami Zayn. Sami says he also went to Kevin's house, and nobody was home, but Kevin's mom was in town, and they visited. Sami said after that he went home and he was ashamed because he went to Kevin Owens' house. He couldn't believe he stooped to that level. He said that this match is different than all of the others they've had because he doesn't know what either of them are capable this time around. Says it's next, not 100% where he wants it to be, but this is where we're at. I'm excited for this match. I'm glad it's unsanctioned because I think that's really adding to the story, but I don't know. Not too much else to that, I guess.
Didn't we say this last week? Who do you think is going to wear the hockey jersey?
Sammy's wearing the hockey jersey.
Both of them.
I don't know. I don't follow hockey, obviously, but like it's the Toronto Maple Leafs, right?
Maple Leafs, yeah.
Do they have like an arch Canadian enemy? Like do they just fucking hate the Oilers or something?
Or like the Canucks?
Yeah, like I don't know, does Sammy come out wearing a Maple Leafs jersey and then Kevin Owens comes out, you know, wearing a Canucks jersey or something and it like would it make the whole place boo? I mean, honestly, at this point, he could come out wearing any American team's jersey and they're going to boo the shit out of him.
Well, I think isn't Toronto next to
Next to Detroit?
Could be the Red Wings. The Detroit Red Wings could be their rival.
Why doesn't Sammy just come out with Kevin's mom and Kevin comes out with Sammy's mom?
Yeah, and then they have a mixed tag team match.
They have to come out of a van though.
Like Trent and AEW.
Yeah.
Those were the days.
Right? We followed that.
Yeah, once upon a time. Cody comes out on Raw. He's talking about the decision he has to make at Elimination Chamber and how it will affect his family. Seth Rollins interrupts and questions Cody's motives for considering The Rock's offer. Cody thinks Seth is being awful judgmental considering all the shitty things Seth Rollins has done. You know, Seth Rollins essentially created the version of Roman Reigns that he so badly hates. Seth says he doesn't want to hear or he doesn't want to hate Cody, but he is coming after his title regardless. So there's some more possible layers being added to this whole Cody thing and Seth thing as well. I guess, did we have any takeaways from this promo?
No, not really.
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So this was interesting because we haven't seen too much, I guess, with the women's tag team titles. I mean, not a ton. The biggest thing is that, you know, Bianca and Naomi have had them, of course, but they defended them against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez in the main event of Raw. I was happy to see it be the main event.
Yeah.
So with that, Liv and Raquel win the women's tag team titles from Bianca and Naomi. And they are the first ever three-time women's tag team champions. What do we think about this?
I'm so tired of Judgment Day getting involved in every single bleeping match.
Bleeping.
Bleeping.
I don't have a bleep button, so thank you.
You have a bell. Just like, is there every match, and of course, it's like, you're going to win titles every time.
I mean, there's been a lot of times they haven't, though.
They have to keep Liv relevant right now.
I don't care.
She's like the woman's face right now, other than obviously Rhea and Tiffany. But I don't know. They got to keep her relevant. And I don't know. Those tag titles haven't really been. I don't know. I don't know if I like the tag titles anymore. The women's tag titles. They just don't put enough on them.
I think they've been doing more with them than they have the women's mid-card titles for sure. Especially lately, but I mean, I will say Naomi and Bianca, I mean, they've been doing something every week, sometimes twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not like we haven't been seeing those titles.
Yeah. I think they need to, I think they need like an NXT tag or the women's tag team to
have
win
they?
Them. And then they just, no, not since they've consolidated them.
Okay. Oh, it's right. I forgot they did that.
Yeah, that was Ronda Rousey.
Oh boy. What does it mean for Bianca and Naomi to lose these tag titles?
I know we talked about this last week, but does it change any of your opinions on who wins the chamber match?
No, yes. But it does give me a better idea of what I think happens with Bianca and or Naomi from here.
You care to share? Or?
Oh yeah, I thought you'd never ask. I mean, obviously Jade, right? I half expected maybe we would see Jade come out and cost them the titles. Now, I feel Jade is the reason one of or both of them do not win the Elimination Chamber, and now we're setting up for Mania.
Are you thinking like she takes someone out and then replaces them in the match, or
no,
like gets
just
involved in the match somehow?
Just gets involved in the match, not replaces anybody.
I mean, I could see it. I'm still picking Bayley to win.
Well, at least now, like, we know Liv's not going to win. She's got the tag title now. They're not going to give her both.
Yeah, I don't expect Liv to win. Because that would once again set up Rhea and Liv, and I don't think they're going to do that again.
Right.
So, all in all, that's going to take us to our final predictions for the Elimination Chamber. So, with that, let's start with Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus versus Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. Predictions. Shorts, you go first.
Trish is in it. They're going to win.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't feel like you give Tiffany a loss in the last PLE before Mania. So I'm going to have to agree with this. Because at some... Well, at some point, Nia and Candice, they're going to branch off from this whole women's title thing, and they're going to be focusing just on Tiffany and Charlotte at some point. So, yep, I'm with you there. Tiffy and Trishy time will win this match. Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, unsanctioned. I don't know if you really call it a match or not, considering, you know, it's unsanctioned, but, what do we expect from this match? Not just a winner, but how do you think the WWE will handle, you know, a quote unquote unsanctioned match? What's going to be different about it?
A lot more tables, ladders, kendo sticks, chairs.
Jumping off the balconies.
Getting hit by a golf cart.
El Generico will come out.
Oh my God, that'd be so sick, dude. Like, Sami Zayn just disappears, and then all of a sudden, like, this like luchador music hits and Sami Zayn just runs out in a mask. I would lose it. Absolutely lose it.
He comes out as Sami Uso.
Yeah, he's doing
just different iterations.
I hope similarly to how I think AEW has done lights out matches, like where they take all the videos off the walls, like they turn the lights down. Like, I hope it's kind of like that. And if this is an unsanctioned match, then I do not want to see a referee anywhere near this match.
Only for like the final, right? Like final pin.
Sure. So let's get a referee without like a WWE logo on his shirt or whatever, you know, like small details. Like if it's unsanctioned, yeah, then you don't want maybe the WWE branding. Yeah. You don't want, if this is truly unsanctioned, WWE trademarks shouldn't be seen once anywhere during this match. Women's Elimination Chamber match. We got Liv Morgan, Bianca, Alexa, Bayley, Naomi, and Roxanne Perez. I'm sorry, by the way. I'm going to have to pick Kevin Owens to win that match.
I'm going Sammy.
Do you think there's any interference maybe from Roman?
I don't think so, personally.
Persuade Sammy.
Maybe Randy Orton.
I just feel like someone's
going to win. Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot about Randy. I do think Sammy's going to win, and I do think Randy might be a catalyst to that.
Oh, I'm going to take opposite of you guys, so I'm different, so I'll take Kevin Owens.
Fair enough.
You said that last week, too.
I said that last week.
Oh.
Maybe not. I don't know, whatever. Women's Elimination Chamber match. Liv, Bianca, Alexa, Bayley, Naomi, and Roxanne Perez. I can't choose. I got to say it's either Alexa or Roxanne. I'm going to be bold. I'm going to say Roxanne Perez wins.
I say it comes down to Roxanne, Bayley, and Bayley wins.
And those two have a feud going on in NXT right now. So that's when I'm wondering if that will get in the way. Their feud will get in the way and then cost them.
It could. The only reason I'm not going with Bliss is because of the Wyatt stuff.
I was going to go with Alexa Bliss because of that.
Okay.
They need to, they would, she almost kind of brings them back into relevancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I 100% see that. I'm sticking with Roxanne just cause I wouldn't be shocked if it happened. So outside of that, we got the Men's Elimination Chamber. So we got John Cena, CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul, Damian Priest, and Seth freaking Rollins. Boys,
going Cena.
Me too.
We already know. You don't have to say it. We know.
I don't think Cena should win. Is it likely? Sure. I'm going to go Punk because I still feel like that makes the most sense. I felt like he should have won Rumble. I think it makes the most sense if Punk wins. I could also see a possibility here of either Cena or Seth winning, and then Punk uses the favor to somehow get into a title match at Mania, possibly the Cody match.
That's a very good yes. That could absolutely happen. That favor is that's been lingering around.
For the purposes of picking one person, I'm gonna go with Punk. So,
but just wait, I'm just,
those are Elimination Chamber predictions locked in.
Yeah, super locked.
Bet.
Well, I guess with that, want to give a big, big thank you to one Perry Von Vicious, the Human Monster Truck. And don't forget, you can also check us out on Apple and Spotify, Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast. Make sure to subscribe. Give us a review, 5 stars, depending on what that platform is. Give us all the good stuff. And then, of course, you can follow us on X. You can also follow us on Facebook, Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast. Don't forget, right here on YouTube, hit subscribe, hit that notification bell so that you know when we go live. And upload other content for you, because you know, we're working on more of that, and that's been a lot of fun to try to figure out. So I think that's everything I got. So thanks for checking out Unprofessional Wrestling, everybody. Again, we really appreciate it. And another big thank you to Perry Von Vicious. We will see you next week right here live on YouTube for the fallout of the Elimination Chamber. We're on the road to WrestleMania. I'm so excited I can't talk. Boys, we're on the road.
Moana. He said Moana.
Moana 2, $1 billion or whatever the fuck Rock said. Anyways, we're on the road to WrestleMania, boys. We're excited. We'll give the old salute. And we'll see you right here next week on Unprofessional Wrestling.